And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is your RBLR Rays podcast. Welcome back, everyone. So glad to have you on another off-season episode of the RBLR Rays show. With me once again is Pat Davenport. Pat, how you doing?
I am doing good. I wish I had brought my suit and tie today because let me tell you something, Zach. It is awards season. It is finally the moment we've all been waiting for. It's the Raisies. The
Raisies. RBLR-easies.
The RBLR-ies. Yeah.
Ribblers. The Ribblers.
The Rebellers. Let's do that. The Rebeller Awards.
The Rebeller Awards.
The silliest awards. Well, they're not all silly, but we've got some silly names for our awards today.
We don't
take these too seriously, but we are excited to give out some accolades to the greatest Rays of 2023.
Indeed. And if you want to join the Greatest Rays podcast of 2023 and every year preceding and following, exceeding? I don't know. If you want to be a part of this fantastic Ray show and this fantastic community we are building, please like, subscribe, be a part of what we're building on YouTube, be part of what we're building on social media, on Twitter, Instagram. I'm not on Instagram, but other people are. And you should definitely follow there if you do have it. I'm on Twitter and I am here on YouTube. So please like, follow, and continue to join us as we are now going to give out some I'm going to stay with the RBLR Awards.
Every time we say it, we should just come up with something different. Nothing is the same. Yeah.
All right. Who is your first Roblesker?
Yeah, the first Ribbler is the RBLR bees. I'm giving up on this bit. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. But my first award is the King of the Ocean because he was the best of our Flappy Boys Under the Sea award, and that was our first baseman, Juan Yandy Diaz. Not only was he the best hitter on the Rays team this year, but he also led the American League in batting average, the first Ray to ever win the batting crown, which is absolutely awesome. I'm glad it was Yandy. And boy, did he earn it. He hit .330 as a batting average, which I know is a bit of an outdated stat, but to hit .330, to get a hit 1-for-3 across a whole season is super impressive. Every day, averaging 1-for-3, you take that every single day. He also had an OBP of .410, slugging over .500. He also had a WRC plus, which is essentially how good you are compared to league average. 100 is league average. Everything above that is better than league average. 164. So he was 64% better than the league average hitter when you adjust for the league's offensive environment, which puts him third in the American League. He was the third best hitter overall in the American League, trailing only Corey Seager, who he just beat out for that batting title, and of course, Shohei Ohtani. He's been absolutely awesome, and I'm so happy that Yandy's had this kind of big breakthrough season that we were all kind of hoping to see from him for a good couple of years now. We always knew that he had the contact skills. We've seen ever since he's come to the Rays, he's had excellent plate discipline. He's really good at controlling the strike zone, taking his walks, and now he's translating that into gap-to-gap power as well. He managed to get over the 20 home run mark for the first time this season. He's just been doing it all over from the offensive side. And I tried to have a quick look at what he was actually doing differently to kind of cause this breakout and not just be a hard hit ground ball guy. And it's one of those where it's actually kind of confusing. His launch angle is actually on average lower than last season by 2 degrees. He went from a 7.7 average launch angle to a 5.7 average launch angle. And his average exit velocity is about a mile per hour faster. So that doesn't help because usually when we think about Yandy Diaz, we're all like, oh, if he just needs to lift the ball more and not hit the ground balls as much. But it wasn't that simple. He actually was really good at limiting his chase rate. His chase rate went down way more. He was always good at getting the bat on the ball, even when it was out of the strike zone, but he's starting to lay off bad pitches more, which means that his quality of contact is gone higher, which is really, really good. And that allows him to get a bit more lift on the ball or place the ball in the gaps, which has helped him get more consistent hits. And he's also started to use the middle of the field a lot more, going from 37% middle of the field hit direction to 45%. And because of those anti-shift rules, there are less fielders up the middle of the field. So he's managed to take advantage of that as well. This is all translated into an awesome year for Yandy Diaz. I'm so, so happy for him. We've got him for a couple more years as well, at least.
Yes.
So all smiles when it comes to Yandy Diaz.
Yeah, and I mean, it's cool to see, you know, him winning the batting title, because he's not like a singles merchant like we've seen. Like, Arias was a little bit better this year, but especially in previous years, he was kind of a singles merchant, and he was having these incredible batting, you know, average numbers. But Yandy is doing it with power. He's doing it with, you know, with doubles and with singles as well. So just an amazing all-around season. Leader of the team, by far the best hitter on the team for last year. It was just an awesome season to watch, and it was fun to be a part of that. Even, you know, as we look back on a season we didn't get to where we would like to, there are some really cool things to celebrate, and Yandy Diaz's season is one of those for sure.
Yeah, if there was a team MVP award, if we were giving out traditional awards, he would be my MVP. So, Zach, what is your first award you would like to present?
My award is the Never Down and Out Award, and that is going to the guy who was never down and out when the team looked like they were down and out of an inning. We always managed to score some more runs when this guy came up to plate, and that is Josh Lowe. This season, with two outs and runners in scoring position, Josh Lowe had 61 plate appearances, which is kind of a, you know, it's not a insignificant amount of plate appearances. In those plate appearances, he had 8 walks, 24 hits, 9 doubles, a home run, 37 RBI, a 1.204 OPS, a 226 ISO power, and a 237 WRC plus. Which, by the way, WRC plus, one of the reasons why I like WRC plus as a stat is because what WRC actually stands for is weighted runs created plus. So it's actually talking about, you know, the stat is really talking about your ability to help create runs for your team, you know. And that again, that comes to a 100 number that's league average. So when there were two outs and runners in scoring position, as clutch as it gets, when usually in situations where you really would like to score and you're kind of on the brink of letting a scoring opportunity go away, and that could be a rebound opportunity for the opposing team. Because if you're in a two outs, runners in scoring position situation on the defensive side, if you get out of that without allowing a run, that's a big momentum shift for you that you can then take into the next inning. But if you are not able to get out of that inning allowing runs, you feel like you missed an opportunity, and now you're like, oh man, we just allowed those runs. And Josh Lowe was great at putting teams on the back foot, and he was 137% better than anyone than league average at doing that. It's been talked about a lot during the year how good he was in those moments, which as he deserves, and it's, you know, I'm talking about it. It's really, really cool. But the other thing I really wanted to talk about with him is, I think one of the most underappreciated aspects of the Rays season this last year was his improvement. If you were going to look at, you know, what is going to impact the future of this team, it is these young players that have come up developing and becoming the future of the team. And Josh Lowe was one of those players who were looking at like, you're going to get a shot this year, kid. When they clearly did not make any, you know, big moves other than bringing in Luke Raley as a left-handed power bat. It was pretty clear, you're going to get the runway, kid. You're going to get the at-bats. He started in 135 games this year. He clearly, they said, you're going to, or played it, he didn't start, but he played in 135 games this year. You're going to be the guy out there most of the time. And so he had an opportunity to really improve. And if he had not improved, I think it would have been kind of a difficult, you know, situation for the Rays to move forward. In his first season with the Rays, he only played 52 games, but he had a 7% walk rate, about a 33% strikeout rate, and his isolated power, which essentially means the percentage of your hits that are considered power hits, was a 122. His OPS was a 627, WRC plus of 82. It's kind of like, okay, that's fine, but we really need more from you. This season, he took a big step forward. The walk percentage was a little bit down, a little over 6% walk percentage. The big thing, the big improvement for him, previous season, 33% K rate. This season, 24% K rate. That is a almost 10% decrease in the strikeouts. That is a big deal. That is a big deal to cut your strikeouts by that much, especially for a young player to just cut your strikeouts by almost 30% over one season. That's a big deal. And it showed. His ISO went up almost 100 points to 208. That's a huge deal. And his OPS jumped almost 200 points to 835. WRC plus of 131 for the season. 131 WRC plus. That's crazy. Like you're talking about elite players. When you talking about 30% better than the rest of the league, you're talking about elite players. That lands you, when you look at the leaderboards at the end of the year, that's going to put you in a very good place. It's going to put you in a very strong place. And he's a 2020 guy. This year, 20 home runs, 32 stolen bases. He developed into everything I think a Rays fan could have hoped for this year. And who knows what he could develop into sooner. You'd love to see that those power numbers even increase and potentially be a 30-30 guy. He clearly has the 30 steals. Does he have 30 home runs in that bat? I'm not sure. I'd love to see it. But clearly he has the ability to be an impact bat and the ability to perform in the clutch. We didn't see it in the postseason. It was unfortunate. We'd have liked to see more from him in the postseason, but he did have some good at-bats in the postseason, but just too small of a sample size. I think if this team makes it back in the postseason next year with another year of development, we could see Josh Lowe be a really, really big part of a championship or ALCS reaching team because he has developed so much, and it's a big deal, and we need to talk about it more.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I'm glad you've given Josh Lowe his flowers. I think he's been absolutely awesome. He's kind of reached what I would have hoped he would have been in just his second stint in the big leagues, which is crazy. But he's still so young and has the ability to improve even more. He's a big guy, athletic, so the sky is kind of the limit for him. If he can make an adjustment to get better at pitches up in the zone, then he's going to be one of the best hitters in the whole league. Period, which is crazy. And I'm glad you made the point about cutting that K rate by about 10% as well, because when the league average batting average on balls in play is about 300, that means that you're putting the ball in play 10% more, which when you've got a 300 average on balls in play, then that is a recipe for good things to happen. A strikeout, nothing good ever comes of it. A ball in play, you never know. So that's really great that that's happened. Absolutely love Josh Lowe.
Yep. And if you look even at his, when you look at the performance with two outs, runners in scoring position, he had 24 hits, but he had 37 RBIs. So that means that he got some productive outs that scored some runs. He had some sack flies, and I couldn't find the sack fly numbers for some reason. I was trying to look for the sack fly numbers. I couldn't find them. Maybe I'm just blind. I could not find the sack fly numbers anywhere on like any statistic, but clearly there are some productive outs that are happening from him. And that speaks exactly what you're talking about. Just putting the balls in play. So great season from Josh Lowe. Can't wait to see what his development will look like going into next year, but just a fantastic season overall. Who is your next award recipient?
So my next award recipient is going to receive the Hercules Award from going zero to hero in no time flat, zero to hero, just like that. And that is Luke Raley. Luke Raley, I think, has been Hercules. He was atrocious last year. Admittedly, in not the biggest sample size of all time, but in his very small sample at the big league level for the Rays last year, he was not good. He had a 585 OPS, which is atrocious. One home run, a 197 batting average. It was no good. And then they said, don't worry, we still think Luke Raley is going to be our left-handed power bat this coming season. And I remember a lot of Rays fans were saying, oh, really? Luke Raley is going to be the guy that's going to get us? And wow, oh wow, did he. I mean, I could not believe the transformation in Luke Raley from last year to this year. He had a great spring training and kind of just rolled onto the roster and didn't look back. He had some amazing stats. Obviously, of course, he had the 19 home runs and put up a 130 WRC plus, which is an excellent production out of a hitter. He had that versatility. He could play either corner outfield spot, first base, or DH for the Rays. And he did it at a better kind of clip than some of the other kind of DHE options like Harold Ramirez. He played better fielding than those guys. He was deceptively fast, which I wrote back when I was doing some more articles. I wrote about how somehow Luke Raley had, I believe it was an 87th percentile sprint speed, which puts him like way up there for how fast he can go. The guy is an athlete, and he's just been absolutely outstanding. He came through with a lot of big hits for the Rays as well. He started to cool down a little bit midway through the year, and then, of course, his season ended a bit early because of injury. But we got to give him his flowers for that excellent, excellent season. Yeah, 130 WRC plus, 249 on the batting average, 319 on base percentage, 436 on the slugging, giving him an OPS of, you do the math, it is, I've lost my OPS numbers, but it was high. It was in the 823, which is really, really good. And if you had 9 Luke Raleys on the team, I think you would win 90 games. I think so. Luke Raley.
Fair to
say. I think Luke Raley, if pushed, could play every position on the diamond.
I would love seeing Luke Raley at shortstop. I think that would be an entertaining. I think he could probably do it, but I think I would love to watch it. I think that'd be very entertaining for sure.
Yeah, I think he would give it an effort. That's for sure. He had really good arm strength. Does. That's for sure. So I like Luke Raley. I think he's still got a lot of swing and miss in his game. And if opposing pitchers kind of figure out what his biggest weakness is, then we could be in trouble. But he's also one of those guys that have benefited very greatly from the lack of shift as well. He pulls a lot of balls. But he has a kind of like Shohei Ohtani kind of thing to his fly balls where you can get a lot of backspin. So his fly balls tend to travel really, really far, which is an encouraging sign as well. But basically, Luke Raley, out of nowhere, just became amazing. And we need to talk about that.
Yeah, really, really unexpected, but also forecasted by people like Ben Whitelaw that he would have a good season, and like you who predicted he would have a good season. And it was really fun to watch. He is such a fun player to watch because of that athleticism, because he's so big and so athletic. Just a fun player to watch. Who knows what role he's going to play next year? I would think they're going to bring him back because they're not paying him basically anything. And he's a lot of value for what they are paying him. So I expect to see him back. Be curious to see what kind of role he plays, especially as we get some roster crunch with guys like him and Aaron Meade fighting for playing time. They don't really play the same position, but they kind of are like that power bat role. So be curious to see how they, you know, fit in with him on the team too. But I expect to see him a decent amount next year as well. Really, really fun season from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Zach, who is our next award recipient?
My next award is the On Your Left award, and that goes to Isak Paredes because he has hit 53 home runs in his this season, 32 this season, 53 home runs in his MLB career. Every single one of them has been to left field. It was well documented that he had all 32 of his home runs this year to left field. But then I was curious, has every MLB home run he's out? Yes, it has. Every single MLB home run he has ever hit has gone out to left field. He has this sort of swing, and it's fun to watch him in an at bat because you can kind of feel when he's getting his swing down and when he's getting that clean motion down. And when he gets that motion down, it's just a sweet swing right over the left field wall. Time after time after time. 32 home runs, 98 RBIs, just 2 RBIs short of 100 RBI season, reminiscent of Brandon Lau coming just short of 100 RBIs a couple seasons ago. But still a phenomenal, phenomenal season from a guy who we were really hoping would, again, kind of similar to Josh Lowe, would take a big step forward this year. And he did. He continued to be the, you know, fill in for, ironically enough, the guy we lost who was a 100 RBI guy, Austin Meadows, and with a little bit more consistent power than than Austin Meadows had. Finished the season, by the way, with a 137 WRC plus, which leads all of MLB from a third base perspective. He is the best hitting third baseman in all of baseball. That's the other reason why he gets the On Your Left award, because he is coming around on these guys like, you know, Jose Ramirez, some of the other more, you know, entrenched, really, really good third baseman that we think about. He's coming up. He's going to be the guy very, very soon. And I think we're going to be talking about him as the best third baseman in the American League and potentially all of baseball. He had a top 12 WRC plus in all of MLB and top 5 in the American League in all of MLB this last season. The discussion around him being a all MLB type hitter is not one that's come up enough. I would really like to see him get the Silver Slugger for third base. It's probably going to go to Jose Ramirez because Jose Ramirez has a better name, or it could even maybe go to Bregman, but again, he had better statistics from a, you know, WRC plus perspective and very comparable statistics from like a counting numbers perspective to both Bregman and Ramirez. I'm sure that one of them is going to get it over him because they're just more known, but I think Isak Paredes deserves the Silver Slugger. He is coming up On Your Left. He is going to be very, very soon considered one of the best, if not the best third baseman in all of the American League and really in all of baseball. I mean, he had a higher WRC plus than guys like, you know, Austin Riley too in the National League. So he is becoming one of the best third basemen in all of MLB. He is becoming kind of the replacement at third base that we've kind of always needed since we lost Longoria. He's becoming that kind of impact bat at third base that we haven't really had since Longo left. So really, really cool to see that development. He's On Your Left. He's coming up.
Yeah, he's been one of my favorite players ever since he's come over to the Rays. Isak's just been a joy to watch, especially considering the kind of valuation that many Tigers fans had of him when he came over from Detroit. Everyone was like, "Oh, this guy's a bozo, a quadruple A kind of player." And I was like, "Yeah, he would be. Have you seen how cavernous left field is in Comerica Park compared to the Trop? It's no wonder he was struggling over there." But he's been absolutely awesome. And I would say he's one of the top priorities this offseason to try and get this guy on 100%. Some kind of extension. Yeah.
100%.
I think he's part of what could be a really amazing infield core that you could compare to the likes of the Astros and the Braves with Lau, Diaz, and Paredes all there. That could just be phenomenal. And it would be great to have that kind of stability in the infield as those are your guys going forward. So yeah, love Isak a lot.
Yep. He's a guy where we've had on that left side of the infield, there's been a little bit of instability. He's been the rock over there. So really, really awesome to have him. Who is your next RBLR award?
Forgive me. This is an atrocious name for this award. I am giving out the Skyscraper Pulley Award for being great at high leverage. And that is, I'm so sorry. And that's going to our guy, Robert Stevenson. I think he has just been a talisman, a holy grail for this Rays bullpen this year that has kind of lacked, not necessarily effectiveness, they have been an effective bullpen, but lacked a kind of consistent arm to go to at the back end of games. Fairbanks has not always been healthy this year. He's struggled to stay on the field at times. Adam, the same, and he seemed to walk this tightrope every time he came into games where, like, you'd get the bases loaded and then give up a fly ball to the warning track every single time to close out the game, which was not good for my heart rate, let me tell you. And other than Poche, Stevenson was kind of our right-handed guy that we wouldn't usually go to close out games, but he would be high leverage guy numero uno, particularly in the 6th to 8th innings. And oh my gosh, the stats on this guy. Chase rate, 41.3%. Whiff rate, 46.3%. K percentage, 38.3%. So he strikes out more than a third of batters. Almost half of his pitches, people swing and miss. Like, what? He was doing so-so with the Pirates before he came over in May. But oh my goodness, since he came to the Rays, he's been using that cutter and spamming it like it's MLB The Show. He's just like, I'm going to keep throwing it until anybody can make contact, and people can only make soft contact or no contact on that pitch. And it is complemented super well by a really nice slider, and he has a splitter that he occasionally goes to, and then of course his traditional four seam as well. And he's just been nothing but nails. Absolute lockdown. I remember a few weeks ago, I compared him to Mariano Rivera because his cutter was just that good.
Yeah.
I mean, in a smaller sample of just 1 year, his cutter has put up similar results in terms of the swing and miss and the batted ball to Mariano Rivera. So elite company there. And he has just been a rock in the back end of that bullpen. He and Poche have been there all year getting results, and I'm just thrilled about having that kind of consistency, and I'm thrilled that he's likely to get a massive payday this offseason.
Yep, I would love to see that be with the Rays. Who knows what's going to happen? I think it should be a big priority for them, because solidifying that bullpen would go a long way to sort of putting in stock towards the future success of this team. But who knows? He's going to get paid by somebody, because what a season from him. I mean, he had a, I'm calling it an immaculate inning. It should have been an immaculate inning, because there was an intentional walk in the middle. That's not his fault. He threw nine pitches and struck out three guys. That's an immaculate inning to me. So what, I mean, just a phenomenal year from him. As a side note, how is it that the Pirates organization does not have Neander and Bendix's numbers just blocked? Like, how are they even picking up the phone from anyone in a Tampa zip code? Like, you just can't, they got to stop. Like, it's almost comical at this point. Like, if you're the Pirates, you cannot pick up the phone. You pick it up, hang it up. Like, you can't, it's almost comical at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Alika Williams is no slouch. He is a solid prospect that went over for Robert Stevenson. But he was not really going to see time with the Rays unless something dramatic happened with, injuries. I think the Pirates did okay for essentially what was a slightly longer rental reliever. But oh my gosh, he was the best reliever in baseball, I think, on a pitch-by-pitch basis this year. And he kind of did it under the radar. You don't see that many people talking about him up there with the likes of, Devin Williams or
it's true.
Those guys. So, but I think this offseason, who's in on him, whether the Rays want to bring him back or who is in on him, will be a very telling sign. I could imagine the Dodgers being very interested in a guy like him. And I'm unfortunately a little pessimistic on his odds on coming back, just because I think the Rays tend not to spend on relievers because they seem to have some kind of reliever generation factory where they just have guys. And they tried it this year. They didn't really go out and get any relievers, and they were like, let's see if we can just bring in a bunch of guys and see if it works. And then they got the more veteran guys like Diekman and Stevenson after a bit of struggle in May. So they might try that again this year, because I trust the Rays to just generate arms, not necessarily starting arms, but one inning guys. They seem to just have a lab somewhere where they do that. So I'm pessimistic, but I would love to see Bob Steve back.
Yeah, I mean, I think the existence of Colby White, I think probably they're either going to keep Diekman or Stevenson. I'm not sure. I don't think they're going to keep both. And I think that their mindset is going to be Colby White will come in and sort of help fulfill the role that, I think especially, with him getting back healthy and performing decently well, I think there's a decent chance they're thinking, well, if we lose one of those guys, Colby White will come up eventually and he'll be kind of a replacement for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also left-handed reliever is something that the Rays don't have tons of options with. So yeah. I think Diekman would be a higher priority. But anyways, enough about the bullpen for now. Let's hear your next award.
My next award is another pitching award, and it is the Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda Cy Young Award. And that goes to Jeffrey Springs, our fallen hero, who we all, we were all jazzed up for his season, and rightly so. Three games he pitched for us this season, he gave up one earned run the entire time, ended with a 0.53 ERA, a 13.50 K per nine, which means for every nine innings, he's striking out 13 guys. Wild. 2.25 walks per nine. keeping the walks low, striking people out. Phenomenal. I just, as a funny statistic, 100% left on base percentage. Like he had, I think the one run he gave up was a home run. So that's he gave up one solo shot and that's it. Like anybody else who got on base, they did not score. Just wild. Ended with a 0.7 F4 over three starts. Just insane. If you extrapolate his statistics out, which is why I gave him the shoulda, woulda, coulda Cy Young Award. If you extrapolate his statistics out, all of his stats basically are only beaten by Spencer Strider. And his F4 would have been on pace for about a 6.5 to 7 F4. Which is an insane F4 for a pitcher if he had actually been able to make that happen. He would have had just slightly fewer strikeouts than Strider. Strider had more walks, but just a little bit slightly lower performance maybe than Strider, but he allowed so much fewer runs than Strider was allowing by the end of the season. So I think he would have easily won the Cy Young, even over Gerrit Cole, who had a really good season. If you extrapolate Jeffrey Springs' season out, could have won a Cy Young. It's a taste of what could come in the future. Hopefully he gets back healthy and is a big part of this rotation going forward. But he is my shoulda, coulda, woulda Cy Young Award winner.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we could have had three of those this year with Shane and genuinely. Drew as well. Because they were all doing really, really well before things went south for them injury-wise. Jeffrey Springs is awesome. I think we need to somehow put some kind of crazy betting line on who the 2024 middle-of-the-road reliever turned into an ace starter is going to be, because we seem to be making this an annual tradition.
Yeah.
I didn't predict Zach Littell was going to be that guy this year, but here he is. And Jeffrey Springs was kind of last year's thing, and he was awesome. I remember in 2022, he was the master of 5 innings pitched, 1 earned run. That was his automatic. And it was, and then seeing the steps he took this year were amazing. His changeup is one of the nastiest in the whole of baseball. Mm-hmm. So I miss Jeffrey Springs. Hopefully he should be back middle of the season next year, probably late July time, if his rehab goes to what generally Tommy John surgery rehab times go. But who's to say, because you can never really calculate that. But usually it's a year and a bit. And he went down really early in the year. So I'm hoping kind of end of July we could see him pitching major league innings next year. I don't know if that sounds about right, but if we can see him coming in putting up and stretched out to some starts at the back end of last year, he could be a real key part of a potential playoff rotation next year.
Absolutely.
So huge. Yeah, absolutely. Love Jeffrey Springs.
Yep, and I think we can get through the majority of the year without him on the rotation. I think we have the guys, but him coming back and being a part of a potential playoff rotation would be absolutely huge. So we'll hope for that and hope for the best.
Yeah. So my next award is the Thank You for Your Service War Hero Medal Awards, the Purple Heart, whatever you want to call it, because I want to give this to a few guys. I want to give it to Joe LaSosa. I want to give it to Zach Birdie. I want to give it to Erasmo Ramirez. I want to give it to Elvin Rodriguez. There were a couple other guys. Cooper Criswell, I think, is another guy that deserves this
Cooper
as
Criswell.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that came in and had their death note already written. They were either coming in only on mop-up duty. Erasmo was very good at that this year, coming in when the game was already past us. And it was like, look, just get us through this game. I don't care if you give up runs or not. Just give us the outs. Yeah. Horrible job. I think that might be one of the toughest jobs in all of baseball, that you never get to pitch any meaningful innings. You're just there for a game that's already out of hand, or you're getting a spot start, but you're going to get DFA'd no matter how well you do at the end of the day. Anyway, no win situations, but those guys all came in and did, varying amounts of success, but they got us through some innings that we didn't have to use our actual high leverage arms or regular starters for, which is just as crucial a part of a 162 game season route to success as having your guys that will, be a key part of the team. And the Rays are excellent at utilizing those guys, but I want to give the flowers to the likes of La Sorsa, Ramirez, and Criswell, who, despite having a messy job, always turned up and had a professional attitude and helped us get to a 99-win season, even if they were usually pitching in losses.
Well, and they're just important to a successful postseason reaching and would have liked to have been winning team. Like, they're going to get a ring. If this team wins a World Series this year, they would get a ring, and they would 100% have earned it. And what's telling, I think, is a lot of these guys, when they get DFA'd, they stay in the Rays system because they understand that, like, the reason they're being DFA'd is not because they're, like, bad or because they're not valuable to the team, just because of the nature of baseball. But I think the Rays instill in these guys, like, hey, we think you're valuable. We want you to stick around. We need you guys. You're an important part of this organization. We want you around. And so I think that that's just a really cool, just another cool shout out to what the Rays do as an organization. And yeah, absolutely. Just respect to these guys for what they did. They were a huge part of the success of this season.
Yeah, and I even think Cooper Criswell could be a sneaky pick if he stays in the org. I think he's a sneaky pick to be that guy that randomly turns up and is a decent starter for us that gets stretched out next year. The Rays already were playing around with that kind of at the front and back end of this year, so we could see that in a major league level if he takes that step up next year. So my fingers are crossed for all his success.
Yep. And another guy who is going to get my next award that's kind of in that sort of bundle, but kind of rose above that, is a guy who is going to get an award that is courtesy of my beautiful and amazing wife, who noted when she saw him pitching one time and said to me, hey, he kind of looks like that guy from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Yukon Cornelius. And I was like, he does look like Yukon Cornelius. So the It's Yukon Cornelius Award goes to Zach Littell, because he does kind of look like Yukon Cornelius. And because that line that I'm referencing is towards the end of the movie when they're in trouble and they need someone to come and save them from the abominable snowman, Yukon Cornelius shows up and saves the day. And that's exactly what Zach Littell did for the Rays. They were in trouble. The abominable snowman of pitching injuries was coming and was trying to, you know, destroy our team. And Zach Littell said, I'm going to come in and just save this team. He didn't save the entire team, but he saved a whole bunch of innings from some really valuable starters and a lot of our bullpen guys, and did a really good job. 14 games as a starter, a 3.41 ERA, 7.1 K per nine, 0.6 walk per nine, which is a really, really, really big deal. Was not really walking guys. Had a 79% left on base percentage. All pretty good numbers. I mean, he's not amazing. He's not a world beater. He's not the best starting pitcher to ever exist, but he was a above average starter in a time when they needed him to be, and he developed into something really, really cool. And I think he's going to be a big part of this rotation going into next year as we have some guys injured. And I think when we get some guys back healthy, he becomes an absolute weapon out of the bullpen as basically a free do-over anytime that you need him. Like, and that's something we talked about for the postseason. It didn't end up coming to fruition as much. But for the regular season next year, when you get sort of your guys back healthy and your guys that are, like, coming back from injury, you can now say, well, I'm gonna start, you know, Jeffrey Springs for three innings because I know I can go to Zach Littell for four. Or, you know, he has that ability. He's going to be super valuable next season. He has won the It's Yukon Cornelius Award for this year.
Yeah, shout out to big Yukon Cornelius himself, Zach Littell. Yes. That was an excellent point about whether he sticks in the rotation long term. I think you're absolutely right that he should be sticking in the pitching staff at the major league level, even when we get Springs, Rasmussen, and eventually McClanahan back and Buzz, because he can be that do-over. And I mean, even in game one of the postseason, he wasn't quite used as a do-over, but he came in and pitched some valuable innings after Tyler Glasnow, and he came and pitched multiple innings, which was, again, really useful when we were behind in a game and didn't really want to burn through the likes of Fairbanks or Stevenson when we're chasing quite a sizable lead. Mm-hmm. So it's just useful for guys that you know can give you a time or two through the order kind of at will. And it's an underrated stat, the Chad inning eater, as Foolish Baseball would always say. He is a Chad inning eater.
Chad.
100%. I think he had the longest start of this Rays season. I might be making that up.
Did Eflin have an eight inning start at some point? Because I know Zeltel had an eight inning start, didn't he?
I'm going to have, yeah, Eflin had an 8-inning. So I'm going to have a look real quick to see if he had the longest start. I think he did.
I think he might have.
8 innings. I don't think Eflin ever went 8 innings. So that just goes to show.
Yeah.
That just goes to show how valuable he is. 8 innings. I mean, we've not had a complete game in.
I wanted a complete game. I understand that it wasn't prudent and it wasn't the smart baseball move. I would have loved to see him go back out there for that. I remember that game, and I just remember, like, because I think I can't remember if we were winning that game or not, but I remember I didn't even care what happened on offense. I was literally just sitting there thinking, are they going to send it back out? Like, so that was all I was caring about for that game, which is, are they going to send Littell back out, and can we see a complete game from him? But
Do you think we'll get a complete game next year?
That's a really good question. I think Eflin has a complete game in him somewhere. I really think he does. I think between Eflin and Littell, we might get a complete game from them next year. I think we will. I'm going to say we will.
Littell last year had a close call going 8. I remember the only other kind of close calls that I remember is Rasmussen throwing 8 perfect innings and then being sent out for the 9th. I think that was in 2022.
That was disappointing.
Ryan Yarbrough had an 8 2/3.
Yes, that was a couple of years
ago. And that was in with a 1-0 lead with one out to go in the 9th, and Cash pulled him. And BA doesn't get annoyed about much, but I remember he was livid.
He was pretty annoyed. He was pretty mad. He was pretty bad. That was humorous.
So yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, we get a complete game next year, and hopefully Yukon Cornelius can be that guy. My last award is something that us in the theater industry know a lot about, and it is the value of having an understudy. Someone who knows all the lines, who knows how to do a great performance, and is ready to step in replacement of a star with a moment's notice. And so I want to give that award to someone who did just that, and that was Oslavis Basabe. I think the circumstances around Basabe's call-up were extremely
tough
for not just the team, but also for Basabe himself, because then he's coming up there and going, gosh, I've got to replace this generational talent while the team is currently marred in national media and controversy and all of these things that could affect team morale and affect his own morale, going, oh, I'm only here because of what happened with Juan DeFranco. So he could have let that affect him.
Yeah.
But no, the Rays showed their trust in him. They said, listen, you're going to be that guy that mans shortstop until the foreseeable, and just have a run. And you know what? He wasn't incredible. He wasn't a world beater, but he played solid defense at shortstop every time he played there. He came up with some big hits, especially early in his stint in the major league level, including a grand slam. So, you know, he was more than serviceable, and I think he's probably got a place on the team next year, depending on what happens in the Franco situation over the offseason. I think he's definitely going to be in consideration for being an infield utility guy, because the Rays love his athleticism, they love his fielding ability, and I know you guys debated on whether he or Walls is going to be kind of the shortstop option. I think I'm all aboard the Basabe train. I think let him do the run, and hopefully he'll continue to develop.
Yeah, I think he's fully, I think he's fully surpassed Brujan as that role, fully surpassed him, and is definitely on Walls' heels. Walls had a really rough showing towards the end of the year. I don't think it's representative of what he is as a player overall. Had a rough showing. Just some uncharacteristic mistakes, was still decently productive offensively, but not amazing. Definitely had a rough end of the season for him. Basabe's going to get a shot. There's no pending resolution for Wander Franco. So we have to kind of go into the offseason and into the next season, assuming we're not going to have him available. And so I think Basabe is going to be a big part of this team going forward. And he performed admirably in a very tough spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think, I know this is kind of a broader off-season, do you think the Rays try and make a grab at a free agent shortstop, or do you think Walls and Basabe kind of get the position until further notice?
I think it really depends on how this situation develops, because this is a bigger topic, but this team was constructed around him, having him available and him being the centerpiece. And when you look at the roster construction, it, if you take it away, it becomes very clear there's a gaping hole there. So I think if they feel like it's they're not going to get a resolution, you may have to, because they don't really have the prospects ready right now that could replace his production. And there really isn't that production available right now at that position. You have it at other positions, but not at that one. So they may be forced to make a move, but it's hard to say until we get more information.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's too close to call, but the free agent market for shortstops is kind of thin this year.
It is.
You could go for a one-year deal with the likes of Kike Fernandez or IKF, but again, it's just like it's not really a big move. It's not that much of an improvement over Walls or Basabe. So yeah, we've got one more award to give away.
And my final award is the Lineup Protection Matters Award, and that goes to the much embattled, at least on in Ray's Twitter, Brandon Lau. I'm gonna just give you one statistic. This is gonna be quick. Okay. One statistic: the OPS plus of the team month to month, April to March, they had a 140 OPS plus. Obviously, really strong start, fantastic start. In May, a 112 WRC plus, still really good. In June. Yeah. They start to go down 103 WRC plus. And in July, they have obviously their worst month, an 82 OPS plus. And then in August, all of a sudden, it goes back up to a 116 OPS plus. And then in September, October, it starts really good at a 107, but it's not quite the same level. It kind of drops a little bit to a 107. There is one, this is not the only explanation, but I think one very good explanation is April and May. You had a fully available Brandon Lau. In June, he gets hurt. The team starts to taper off. In July, he's not available for some of the month. And then when he's back, he is still injured and he's not performing at his optimal level. They're not doing well. All of a sudden, he kind of gets back on the horse and starts doing what he does. What do you know? Their OPS plus raises up again to a 116. And then all of a sudden, he goes away again. The OPS drops again. I don't think it's a coincidence. As much as we talk about Brandon Lau and how good or good he isn't, at the end of the day, the team is better with him on it. The stats bear it out. You could really dive deep into it, but I think that one simple stat shows it. Brandon Lau matters. When he's in the lineup, it affects the ability of other guys to perform. When he's not in the lineup, it affects the ability of guys to perform in a negative way. And I think it's just very clear that when he's not there, the team is worse. And that's all really, I think to me, that's kind of the only argument that I need to talk about how good he is that when he's not available, the team is worse, period.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think with Brandon Lau, what you got to do is you just got to kind of accept a couple of things about Brandon Lau. One of those things is he's probably not going to be there all the time. He will need his days off. He is not capable of playing 162 games. Which does, you know, it is a factor, but you've just got to accept that that's part of his makeup as a player. Yep. Second of all, you got to accept he will strike out sometimes. He's not a guy, he's not Luis Arraez, okay? He is going to strike out sometimes. He's not an elite bat-to-ball contact guy. But the trade-off for that is that he has an 84th percentile walk percentage, so he still gets on base at an elite clip. And whenever he does make contact with the ball, he annihilates it. So you've just got to go, listen, he's going to be one of those hitters that hits the ball hard but strikes out a lot. But that is valuable when you've got people like Yandy Diaz setting him up. So it's all part of a construction of a team. And like you said, the team is better when he is there. And do you know what else? Do you know what people don't talk about with Brandon Lau? He is an 86th percentile in outs above average at second base.
Excellent point. That's a really good point.
He's a really good fielder. He's an underrated fielder. And a great base runner, very efficient base runner. He's got a good baseball IQ, I think, is the thing about that. His mental game is really, really good. Love Brandon Lau. He's that dog, and we love him.
He is.
And he does matter a whole load to this team, and I only wish he didn't get injured at the end of the season, because I think we could have got Zach Blaine to shave his head.
I know. It was this close. I was so mad when he fell that ball off his knee and he was gone, because his hair, Zach Blaine should be very grateful. His hair was coming off. It was going to happen. And the foul ball off the knee just prevented us from having one of these offseason episodes be the episode where Zach Blaine shaves his head. Very disappointing. Maybe we'll have to redo that bet next season on some level. Well, we absolutely will have to.
Yeah, 30 home runs next year. Brandon Lau gets it. He's got to shave his head.
I think so. Maybe if we hit 300 subscribers on YouTube, where you should like and subscribe and support us, maybe we can get him to shave his head then. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for him, but you never know. And to all of our subscribers that we currently have out there who are joining us as a part of this show, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of the RBLR Awards show. We really appreciate you guys continuing to follow us throughout the offseason. We're going to be here all offseason, continuing to bring you the best Rays podcast out there. And I'm just excited to continue to go through this offseason and talk about the future of this team. It's unfortunate that the season ended when it did, but we're gonna keep moving forward, and we're gonna keep giving you great content all off season long.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to keep that going. It's going to be an interesting off season. I'm sure there's going to be some interesting twists and turns. What are we going to do with the 40 man? All of these amazing things, but I can't wait to keep on talking about it.
Yep. Well, thank you all for joining us once again on this show. And thank you for being a part of this community. Continue to like and subscribe. I forgot to do the ad read. Go buy a shirt at shop.aubreylawsports.com. Promo code Flapping for 10% off and raise up.
Bring back the devil shirts. They're yes. Hot.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.